Welcome, team. So great. So we're going to begin with an oldie but goodie from last year, the Bengtsons. And I found this song when Erin and her beautiful baby Juniper were making their challenging and but beautiful but challenging entrance into the world. And I found this song, and at the same time, Sean was also like, "Whoa, coming back to the world." So this is a song about coming back. And we're coming back. So here we go, the Bengtsons coming back from the other place.
Oh, I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I said, oh, children, oh, mama. Look what I have found. I am fat with the good shit, mama.
Fat with the good shit.
I'm so fat with the good shit from going underground. Congratulations!
Congratulations!
You made it! You're alive against all odds! You're here and you're alive! I mean, just evolutionarily speaking, the things and odds were really stacked against you. I mean, the whole Big Bang had to happen, and you had to also like make it through this week. And if you're here right now, that means you've been born at least two times, because before you were born into the land of air and breathing, you were born as a spark in the dark, in the heart, in the center of your mother's belly. And the first thing you did was split in two, and then you grew, and then you grew. You knew exactly what to do. You sprouted little arm buds, and you sprouted little leg buds, and you were grooving around in there. You were basically like a little Teddy Graham, just grooving around in the ocean of your mother's belly. And then you grew a tail. You lived your life as a baby whale. You had an entire aquatic life cycle, and so did you, and I did too. And you couldn't see your mother, but you could believe in your mother, because you could feel your mother, and you could hear your mother's heart beating like go, 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 against the tiny rhythm of your own heart beating. And that was your first experience of polyrhythm. So if you're a musician, you should call your mother and thank her right now.
Thank you, Mom.
And you may not have been the dream of your mother, if you know what I mean of your mother. You might never have felt seen by your mother. That's the complicated human being of your mother. But there is another mother. There is also another mother. And there is a mother's 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 father's father's parents' parents' mother's 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 all the way back to ancient deep water fish whose only wish was for you to jump up and live, for you to jump up and live exactly as you are, beloved, born under the right star, beloved, exactly as you are, beloved, born under the right star, beloved. But before you got that far, beloved, you got big, and your mother got so beautifully, terribly fat. She said, that's it, honey, I have had enough of that. I have heartburn and hemorrhoids. I can't do this anymore. I can't fit through the door. You're gonna have to learn how to breathe. She said, come on in, honey, come on in. Are you hungry? Come on, come on in. Come on in if you're tired, she said. Come on in, come on in, come on in. Are you hungry? All the mother said, come on in, come on in, come on in. Are you tired? She said, coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. We're all coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I said, oh, children, oh, mama, look what I have found. Oh, I am fat with the good shit, mama.
Fat with the good shit.
I'm so fat with the good shit from going underground.
Woo!
So I so love that. I've heard it a million times, and I so love that. And I love the line, "You might not have been the dream of your mother, if you know what I mean about your mother. You might not have felt seen by your mother, but there are always other mothers, 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 going all the way back to some deep water fish that wants you to jump up and live." I love that. It moves me. It always moves me incredibly. And it's perfect for us now as the waxing almost full moon is rising at zero Scorpio right now, making a very quirky angle to the sun in Gemini. So to be able to conversationally Gemini speak of deep mysteries, that is our aspiration with backup, you know. And it says, you know, on our ancestral lineage, all the mothers going all the way back, all the way back, all the way back. And we'll honor anytime something enters zero, it runs right into Pluto. Pluto's at, you know, at well, stationing at 2 Aquarius, right? So it's going back to zero. Well, it's actually going back to 29 Capricorn for the U.S. election. Ah, okay. but so anytime something enters, it encounters Pluto first, you know, and as we remember, Pluto stationing at 2 Aquarius, whose image is deserter from the military following their own wilderness path. And we here are enthused, eager to spiral that image, that blessing out into the world, necessary miracles, deserting the military. And how about the international court issuing warrants, really, for the arrest of Bibi and other Israeli officials and Hamas officials, too? And we go, well, that's super great. That's great. Oh, here comes another teammate. That's wonderful. So the moon squares Pluto, reminding us, you know, astrology, really the fixed signs. We have Taurus planets, Scorpio moon, both square Pluto and Aquarius. And the fixed signs say, well, what is it to be a complete person? You know, and what is it to have an Aquarius community? And it says, well, it must then have Taurus, the touchback with the wilderness. That's part of what we're all here doing. And then Leo is the missing thing, but everybody's Leo fills it in. You know, a community is one that welcomes the unique creativity of the individual. And then we get to Scorpio, right? And it says, well, a healthy community of our own psyche or outward in the world depends on how much we welcome the dark, spicy Scorpio truths and insights. And I go, all right, so here we are. So welcome, team. It is wonderful to have all of you and my esteemed colleagues, you know, Sean from Forever or Kahooting, there you are, and Eddie Nix, wherever he be in the lineup here. There we go. There we go. He's at the top right next to me. So that's so wonderful. And then just before I turn it over to we to and fro and, you know, and everybody, you know, the chat is open and feel free to also to raise your hands if you want to speak in a council form. I think having more than one person cahooting makes it easier for people to jump in. It's not so daunting. And then, yes, an appreciative shout out to our council mate, because we get emails who were like, hey, where's the community? I feel very alone. Where's our dedicated Facebook page to discuss our readings and the news? And it's like, oh, right. No, we're getting to that as soon as I finish reading Dark Scandinavian Noir and Procrastinating. But that was useful and welcome, because it's like now we have it, and catalyzing us out of our meandering bewilderment. So we do have the Facebook page, and I will even be tapping into it, and we can post things there. And if you don't want to join Facebook, which is perfectly reasonable, I will drive over to your house and read it aloud to you. I mean, or we'll get it all to you. As I put in the notes, you know, the enhanced field of synchronicity. So as I was, the dogs, right, at around 11 p.m. were like, nighttime walk. I'm like, oh, and they're like, no, really. And I'm like, you have the higher moral authority. That's really a good idea. Let's go out. And that's where we ran into the deer, and then joined by another deer, very calm. And the dogs were like, hey, how you doing? Which is not usual. You know, and we conversed, and We were all eating greens, so I ate the greens, and then I realized they were eating the mulberries from the mulberry tree. So we all ate we feasted together, and I was like, "You can trust us. Not all humans. Not, and mind the roads." You know, they were like, "Yeah, cool." And then we wandered on, and fox late night fox always comes to join us. It's a little daunting because the fox is like, "Hi," and it's like, "We were pretty sure you're not rabid," but but followed us for quite a long while. And I'd run into, you know, a baby fox a couple of days earlier, right as I opened my car door, going, "Hello." So these encounters, and then I had one, there's the moon, right? And I go, "I bet the moon's at 21 Libra." And it's like, "Oh, it is," right? So it's like, it's so wonderful in the enhanced field of synchronicity to go, "Oh, this, all this is real." And I'd been thinking so much about the Pentecost themes, and I go, "Oh, Pentecost probably happened a while ago." And I looked it up, and no, it was yesterday. It was yesterday. It was as the dogs and I were walking on Pentecost evening in the waxing moon. And it's like, I could feel it, right? And so Pentecost is, you know, as I put in the notes and everything, but it's my favorite Christian pagan thing, because it's when the white stag leaps into Arthur's court and Arthur says, "Nature has sent an emissary and we must all, everyone must go by themselves into the forest where it's darkest for them. To do otherwise would be a shame." That's how the Grail legend or part of it begins. And it's like, ooh, so we've been wandering and now we're coming back. There we go. And Arthur said, "And do not come back until you conversation with Fauna." And so they do come back. And that's when the Holy Ghost as a fiery dove descends on each person's head and gives them the capacity to speak and understand all language. And then we, of course, expand that it be flora, fauna, fungi. So, Sean, do you want to start us off? You've been at the Mushroom Festival.
Yes, and of course, I think that the message about the mushroom, one of the messages of the mushroom realm is all about metabolizing that, metabolizing and breaking down that which is going back into the earth and then dreaming back into these fruiting bodies that then release the spores on the wind that carry the experience of the whole mycelial organism to another place to be incarnated in a new form. And I was writing today about coming up on the anniversary of teetering at the gateway of death and realizing that I had never made the choice to be fully incarnated in this lifetime. It was so interesting what you're mentioning in the beginning, that necessary Scorpio dark sparkling insight. And I was definitely in the realm of that then. And of course, it all fits well with my ascendant as well. And now here I am finding myself very much in the realm of that decision-making again, but now from a place of feeling more vitality than I think I've felt before, but finding the place that are still not quite in resonance. And making a decision about, okay, I want to incarnate fully my essence in this body in this lifetime before I'm done with this incarnation. So there's that.
Coming back. Right. So, yeah, choosing. I mean, Uranus, trickster, genius, all part of this cahoot. I'll bring the chart up at some point, you know. But I like to think of Uranus, trickster genius, dancing with all of us, saying, "We are big beings. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice. And then whatever you choose to do is going to fly." And my oldest sister keeps hovering on the abyss. You know, she was the one who called me at the exact moment of the eclipse when I was in Texas. You know, "Hi there, Priscilla. Priscilla remembers this." You know, and left. I go, "Who's calling now?" Yeah, and she left a message going, "I think I'm dying," whatever the thing is. And And before I called her back, I had an invisible conversation with her backstage, going, "Well, are you tired and sad and done, or do you want to sign up for another round?" So then I called her in real life and I said, "Are you sad and tired and are you done, or do you want to sign up for another round?" And she goes, "Another round of what?" And I go, "Another round of life." And she was like, "Yes." So she chose it, right? And it's like, rather than, oh, to choose to be alive, right? And that's very much in that song and very much in what Sean had to say, all of that choosing, right? So there's all of that. So we do want to, the moon at zero Scorpio says, well, the portals are open. I'll kind of animate that for us, but great radio KPFA ally Larry Bensky died yesterday on Pentecost Sunday. He was a wonderful political curmudgeon, not easy for everybody to get along with, but I'm a curmudgeon whisperer. But he was a genius. You could just relax. He knew so much about politics in the most informed and savvy and anarcho way, and he would moderate all the hearings and the conventions and the whatever, and he stopped doing that a little ways back. And he was very like astrology, and it's like, but you died on Pentecost Sunday, which I think of as kind of a broadcaster's holiday, right? Because it's or holy day, because it's when the Holy Ghost descends as a fiery dove and gives each person the capacity to speak and understand all language, basically broadcasting, right? So I think of it as the broadcasting sacrament. So I love Larry Bensky, and honor him. Studs Terkel's birthday was very recently. Great, great, wonderful interviewer. And I go, well, let's put together the backstage bureau chiefs from the dead, right? And Eddie, if you would unmute yourself just for fun and invite in, you carry so many, and I never tire of hearing you honor all of what David Graeber and Peter Lamborn Wilson, whom you introduced me to, and then there's Kropotkin and many, many things. But yeah, if there's anything, if there's anybody you want to invite in or say about David Graeber or Peter Lamborn Wilson that you introduced me to, I'm like, oh, could have been a best friend.
Well, there's always, of course, the great dead booksellers that I try to honor a lot. Who comes to mind is Peter Howard from Serendipity Books in Berkeley, another major curmudgeon in all the beautiful ways that an old bookman is. And yeah, that's part of our story. We were able to buy out the end of his bookstore and bring a semi truck back from Berkeley and give away about 30,000 books on the streets, maybe, I don't know what it was, 6, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, on Berkeley. And it was just such an amazing experience. And to sort of imagine these people that have gone. Another one that comes up is Utah Phillips, in
Oh,
the
yeah.
Promethean radio mythology. I remember we have a radio station here. I'm a part of WDRT, and we used to play his show, and we played through the entire series so that it started repeating. And then at some point, someone decided, oh, well, these are all repeats, so let's not continue it. But just recently, before my show, there was a segment of it that played, and I heard his voice again telling these stories. And oh, so inspiring in that interface between anarcho and the spiritual. Even though he wasn't an outwardly spiritual guy, he had that in him as only a true hobo who's been through it all and walked down those roads and sat on those front lines and sang those songs to the people who needed the inspiration. So Utah comes to mind. And as I mentioned backstage, Spider John Kerner, a great 12-string blues hero from up in Minneapolis, passed away on Saturday.
Oh.
Just one of these troubadours who kept the music going and kept the hope going through the blues, through the most darkest, you know, type of music and resonance and frequency. Somehow that the opposite of that is some sort of hope, the magic of the blues. So I guess those are the people I'd invite backstage. Of course, Peter Lamborn Wilson, a great teacher of mine and someone I miss a lot. Yeah, always looking at both sides of the structure. And of course, Robert Anton Wilson, his fake twin brother, who taught us maybe logic, you know, there is no certainty. There are no straight lines, you know, all we can do is say maybe, and then at least we're not wrong and offending someone. Right. And maybe we should invite in Alfred Korzybski too, who, you know, gave us the great maxim of E prime, you know, let's eliminate this word is, right? Nothing is, you know, you're not beautiful. You're not an asshole. You're just how you appear right now in this context. Nothing is eternal except maybe everything, but getting rid of that idea of identity and is, I think, is just such a helpful concept to me. And as far as those dead bearded folks, those are the bunch I'd invite in.
Right.
Yeah. May I add a couple dead bearded curmudgeons? You know, just I know that I always call him forward, but since his departure, Stephen Buhner has been so much more present in my world even than he was when he was on this side. And he was, among other things, an old style bookman. And so I think of him among our wonderful curmudgeons. And of course, staying with the very complicated, I think of Edward Abbey and his particular ferocity, often directed in the right places and sometimes very much not, but completely willing to just go as instinct was telling him and stretch the conversation further in beautiful ways. And then with birthday anniversaries, tomorrow is the shared birthday of my teacher's teacher, Victor Anderson, who wove together elements of traditions from his own lineage and from around the world to bring forward a very powerful and very loving form of magic. And then his spiritual son, born on the same day many decades later, Gwydion Penthrowyn, one of the first great musicians of the pagan revival and the unofficial bard of the Society of Creative Art Anachronism, and a great bringer forward of Welsh and Irish sacral king myths, but also bringing them forward from an anarchist perspective.
Yes. And then, you know, even though many know this, but just, you know, Stephen Buhner was your ally herbalist mentor. And I met him before I met you, just on radio, and he was a wonderful curmudgeon. And he did let me tease him, you know, it was, you know, but the way I encountered him, and again, what we want to embrace, all our backstage bureau chiefs from the dead, you know, it was early on that Stephen Buhner said, you know, this idea of manners and then our, where we want more complexity and nuance when we speak of invasive plant species. And he said, I can walk around somebody's house and look at the weeds that are growing there and diagnose that person's illness because the weeds are growing, are showing up to heal them, right?
You know, when I was first seeing plants in the very barn that I'm speaking from right now, I would then ask to go visit their outhouses, because everybody I was seeing was, this was before we had legal cannabis in Maine. And so everybody I was seeing was an off-grid cannabis farmer. And so I know I could go to their outhouses and walk around the outhouse, and whatever was growing around the outhouse would tell me, oh, this is the, I can see the imbalance they're putting into the soil. And that imbalance they're putting into the soil will call the same plants that will correct that imbalance in the soil of their own bodies. And I'm now beginning to look at more of that myself as I refine this incarnation business.
Yes. So it's very much, you know, cooperators are standing by that, you know, the antidote is always next to the poison in nature, which is useful for us to tease into everything. And then, Edward Abbey, right? Is it the Monkey Wrench Gang? Is that the first famous?
It is, yes. Although Desert Solitaire might have come before the Monkey Wrench Gang, and I actually like quite a bit better. Monkey Wrench Gang is a lot of fun, but Desert Solitaire, which he advises the reader to throw through something big and glass, is where I think the real essence of Abbey comes through. And it was his frustrated animist rants about trying to be an animist within the National Park Service.
Oh. Yes, to all of our animists. And do you want to say anything about Edward Albee, Eddie Nix?
Well, the zoo. No, that's Albee. Abbey, yeah, not much except what a hero, you know, and just looking at the trajectory of Earth First. I remember my personal evolution from like a lot of those gatherings was Rainbow Gathering in my 20s to Earth First in my 30s, where I, you know, it was the same essence of the rainbow, but with a focus, you know what I mean? Like, what are we going to accomplish? What are we going to shut down? And these gatherings, instead of just being a gathering to gather, you know, I mean, the Rainbow Gathering is probably one of the most epic like events that happens, at least in this country, on a yearly basis. Simply for the fact that it happens, and that people are able to come together and live together without money and without coercion and hierarchy and all these things, and somehow come out of it alive. Whereas the Earth First, you know, rendezvous were, I think, much more, it had that element of community, but it had a deeper focus. And even though the spiritual might not be the same, it was still the same presence, but a raging spirituality versus maybe a dancing spirituality. So as far as those intersections, those rare intersections where the radical political meets up with the esoteric, I would consider Earth First and things like that to be great manifestations, at least in our time, of those things. Of course, right, they go back forever, these communities, these movements, and talk about a forgotten history too, which is one of the beautiful things about Peter Lamborn Wilson's work, is he really digs down and traces through these communities and these movements that came with America, you know, an idea when it was colonized, the resistance that was always there. Whether it was the resistance of the revolution and the Masonic Lodge behind it, to after the revolution and those people becoming the only class and using their Masonic Lodge for the opposite purpose. These things are all interesting.
They're all super interesting. And they're all super interesting to all of us, you know, engaging nuance. And I was just remembering that the word nuance comes from nuée, French word meaning cloud, right? So nuance. And yeah, in our conversings, Eddie, which I never tire of and always happy to just go over that one more time, you know, because we're here engaged in de-bamboozling, you know. And so there's the, you know, and Robert Anton Wilson was an ambiguous, tricky person, right? Because, you know, the evil Illuminati, but no, they were good and tyrannical, right? So everything can be both. Right.
I think so. And I think you have to look at, instead of, you know, trying to make decisions of the past, maybe look at it with an opener eye of the balance of how far away from maybe a center. You know, it amazes me how we're still trapped in so many ways in the linear, in the straight line, which doesn't exist anywhere in the universe, but yet our entire fucking culture is based on it. From money to everything. And straight lines, I think, if we really dive deep, are one of the biggest problems we face. And it's not like we can just get rid of it. It's in everything. It's the way we think. And the reason I'm ranting about this is I just finished watching the most recent Joe Rogan podcast with Terrence Howard, who's come up with this new science, basically, that brings back in the ether and gets rid of dark matter and black holes and these things that are just like ways of compensating for the mistakes in mathematics that we've had for 5,000 or a couple thousand years. And so it was inspiring to me to you know, knowing that the solutions don't need to be invented. They're already there. Nature has it in everything. And somehow collectively getting back to that place where we realize that, it's inspiring to think about, let's say, in this age of endless problems.
Right. No, that's great. Oh,
yeah. One thing I ended up talking about this weekend was about how the intoxicating plant and the associated neurotransmitter of any philosophical movement can really become a defining factor of an age, and how the Enlightenment came during the period when caffeine was first being introduced to Europe, and Descartes would drink 70 cups of coffee a day. And that spikes norepinephrine, which is that single linear outward focus toward a single goal or a single threat. And all of the mathematics, all of the philosophy, all of the science coming out of that movement was taking that particular form. And it's really not until you have the scientific world beginning to play with LSD around the time of that you began having some of that shift in the emergence of chaos mathematics and of fractal geometry and of all these other understandings. And yes, like the famous paper that began fractal geometry about how the coast of England is infinitely long. Because if you try to measure it in a straight line, you'll get a fixed number. But if you keep making that line smaller and smaller to represent every little curve in the coast, you can keep dividing that infinitely, and the coast gets longer and longer.
That's great. And yeah, so we will also post what Eddie referenced, the Terrence Howard, right? And he's on Rogan's show, and you were like, I hope you don't. Well, nuance. Rogan's got some great people on, Paul Stamets and this person and whatever. And so we are increasingly nuanced people, right? Because Earth First, you know, when I first encountered them and hosted them on radio, you know, they were very like, wow, you know, blow things up, you know. But even in the course of the conversation, you know, as I mentioned, you know, to you, Sean, when we hosted Wolf about the Good Medicine Conference, right? And Wolf was like, I coined the term rewilding, and it's like, okay, all right, yeah, that could well be, but the other Earth First person said, no, I coined the rewilding. It's like, all right, to go, wait, I got tripped up on my own thought here. Right, and then, you know, again, may we all be communicative agents of welcoming complexity and nuance. And so it was in the show with the Earth First people many long time ago, but they did, I was like, well, your animistic self is welcome here, you know. And they were like, oh, right, well, we do, nothing defeats a chainsaw better than yarn. So we yarn the trees, right? And then they said, you know, and as we yarn the trees, we put our prayers into the yarn, like a Native American prayer stick, that whoever cuts this yarn, may their heart be full of kinship with nature. It's like, all right, you go, Earth First, rah, 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 and this. And that's what we're really here brewing, which is the political, spiritual, the anarchist. Yeah, because, you know, Eddie and I been, well, everybody really here connecting, going right, with a wonderful book that we can also post excerpts from by Erica Lagalis, who's a very private person, but wrote this great book on the occult, you know, the occult features of anarchism. And I knew it. Right, because I had a grumpy teenage, you know, religion's a crutch, political, rah, 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 and then entheogen spirituality, like, oh, whoa, 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 and then a huge chapter on anarchism, you know, my friends Tonya and Kenneth Baker in Rhode Island were my anarchism mentors. We read everything, right, back in the 70s. And they said, well, you gave us astrology and spirituality, and we gave you anarchism. And it's like, right, right. And then, but they start off together. That's the thing. And then they get separate. And we're here, everything started off together, right? And then gets separate. It's the diaspora into uniqueness. But now is the simspora coming back. So I was so delighted, you know, that what we're tracking, it's like, oh, it's the same thing. And these false estrangements are really brokered by the reality police to render people less than effective. And that's also how shall we participate in the political realm? And, you know, nuance and complexity, because we're certainly in an interesting bind here, assignment, you know, now in the world, rising Christo-fascism everywhere, you know, planes going down, attempted assassination in Slovakia, you know, a failed coup in which the coup person dies in but with American mercenaries in the gun. It's like, whoa, okay. And so at this point also, I want to bring in wonderful dead ally, Bob Goff, who was the lawyer for the Lakota Sioux, spent 30 years winning their lawsuit against Crazy Horse Malt Liquors and many, many, many other great things. And he, you know, with some of his best buddies, best Lakota buddies, they've been working on the Native American wind power projects and the grids, and that's still like made that happen. But he said, you know, yeah, the Clinton Foundation, yeah, but they give us a lot of money for solar, and they fund our projects on the reservation. So it's like, you bad Clintons, oh, this is good. Yeah, and I just want to bring in nuance. And Bob Goff was always deeply informed and very kind, excuse me, and funny. And so when he was addressing, you know, right-wing Christian organizations, he'd say, we don't want the fuels from hell, coal and oil. We want the fuels from heaven, sun and wind. And they're like, oh, that's very Christian. Yes, sorry, we're behind that. And then one of the things I loved most, I was cahooting with Rupert Sheldrake, and he thought that maybe I would be a good replacement for Terence McKenna. We welcome him too, who had died. And so we were going to meet with the other, there were three people, and an important person, right? I won't shame the person, but somebody who's taken more DMT than anybody in the world. And we meet, and it wasn't going well, because it was very, very boys. But this important person said, you know, we have to be done early because I have to be in bed by 9. I have to be in bed by 9. It's like, okay. And so as we're deconvening, he reveals, this important person who's taken so much DMT, that he thinks that the climate crisis is a hoax. And I'm like, really? Whoa. Okay. You know, whatever. And I told that to Bob Goff, and Bob Goff said, oh, well, that makes sense because most climate crisis change happens after 9. Anyway, I just thought that was so wonderful, you know, to spiral and still maintain bonhomie, which he did so well, going, yes, Clinton's bad, Clinton Foundation money to the reservation's good. We want this complexity and nuance in our engagement. Oh, that's great. Aaron's already posted the Erica Lagalis occult features of anarchism. Wow, that's so clever of you. And Eric Newman says, for you Abby fans, The Journey Home was his last book, right? So we do all these people blending effective action in the world with magic and participation and love of the earth. You know, that's really so fabulous. Yeah, and Sean, anything you want to report from the Mushroom Festival in Maine? How was that?
It was really good. There were 800 people who showed up, which is quite, you know, if you asked me 2 years ago, would there be 800 people coming to a mushroom conference in Maine? I would have said, of course not. But there they were. Although it's also interesting that, you know, I'm watching the beginnings of the emergence of the psychedelic industry and the professionalization of privatized curation of set and setting, whether clinical or by new churches or by your tripping coach. And so I'm feeling in a very fungal way, like, well, the mycelium we go into the new place, always arrives in the new place, metabolizes what's there, and then begins moving further. And so my sense right now is that the psychedelic renaissance movement is at a growing edge where it is very fixed on how do we become integrated into the cultural paradigm as it exists? How do we mainstream this? And so that becomes precisely the time to begin asking, well, should a human really be your primary guide in engaging these other realms? Or should you maybe be looking primarily toward the other than human? And sure, a person can be around there to make sure your human needs are met, but best for that person to have the lightest touch possible, and for you to go be in that most authentic relationship possible with the medicine and with some other being who's not a human. You can easily make friends with a tree over the course of a year and then ask that tree to be your trip setter. And so I feel like that's the direction that I'm feeling the mushrooms wanting to bring the conversation into, as people are trying to figure out, well, how do we tame this? And the one other thing I'll say along those lines is there's so much talk right now about safety and about integration. And we really have to define what we mean by safety. It's like, yes, it is good to make sure people's basic needs are well cared for. And if something goes really, really wrong, that somebody can be on hand to help. At the same time, this last year, one of the things Stephen kept repeating to me was a whole lot of people are going to be really disappointed when they find out that Gaia makes no guarantee of safety. And these medicines are at their core transformational. And transformation is by definition unpredictable. And so how do we hold on to the core of that medicine? And I would actually say that my quote unquote bad LSD trips were what prepared me best for the moment in the hospital, not knowing whether my blood pressure was coming rapidly down or every blood vessel in my body was exploding. And being in that abyss and being in that place of unknowing and being like, okay, I recognize this abyss. I've been here before. I know what to do. And so, yeah, in the anarchist spirit that's coming forward tonight, I think that the plants and fungi that give rise to these medicines, yes, very happy fewer people jailed for being involved with them, and very happy for more people in need of this medicine to have connection with it. But it's not really very aligned with their nature to be privatizing the commons of the other world and putting it in the hands of particular human institutions.
It is a complex thing, right? And again, whether anybody or everybody here is familiar with entheogens and chooses to partake or microdose or not, I think the field is relevant. It's like we're all tripping, I mean, on some level. And what you were saying, Sean, those skills, you know, of, you know, going, well, it's like I remember reading, you know, Carl Jung saying that his experience of the divine was when he encountered a kind of powerful, worthy of respect, slightly dangerous opposition will to his own. I'm like, oh, you know, and I remember this was years ago, but years ago, I mean, these themes that we're all dealing with are long ago. And I met this California character whose name was Total Chi. And he said, I don't know who this Jung guy was, but he must not have been very enlightened, you know. And anyway, so we go, okay. But, you know, again, what you were saying about with many of the entheogens, we wonder who was the first person. Like I had an Ibogaine experience, which is very profound, you know. And as it comes on, you go, who first took this? And if you didn't know, you'd think you were dying, you know. And under that, it's the grandmother father of all psychedelics. It goes on for a long time, and you shouldn't move. And you shouldn't have any light, right? And it's like, ooh. And then it's like, okay, I know how to do this, right? I know we're just going along with this. And then it becomes an ally. And I think of now very like that, you know, it's like, ooh, and it's like, we're going with it, those navigational skills. So let me bring up, yeah.
Stephen would point out that who first took that would be the other plants growing beside it. Oh, and that they had that same kind of experience too, but they had it in a plant way. And that we become so convinced that these evolved just to interact with human nervous systems rather than being beings who have interacted with the systems of consciousness of plant and animal and fungi relations, going back long, long before humans or even mammals existed.
Right.
Are you familiar with the book, The Immortality Key, Sean? I'm sure you are.
No, I'm not.
Oh, Brian Muraroski, I think it was. He did all this work in ancient Greece, basically going, okay, hey, we got your, you know, we have this stuff that was being used in ceremony there. We had these temples. And he actually got to the point where he was doing the science chemically on the old antiquated jars and bowls that were from some of these ritual sites. And his, you know, his theory is that, yeah, this was a psychedelic experience back then. And at least the Greeks used it that way in one form or another.
Wow. Well, yes. No, right. And Ceres Demeter, dwarf planet, but goddess of the earth, right? Founder of the Eleusinian Mysteries and longest theatrical initiatory rite in human history. And we know some things. I'll repeat it. If you've heard me say this, you can chant along. But people would march to Eleusis, chanting to Dionysus, the green man, Eleutheria, Eleutheria. You brought that to us, Sean. And then they'd arrive at Eleusis. Apparently it was a 9-night event. And they would drink a psilocybe mushroom ergot brew, basically psilocybin LSD, dance all night. And then everybody had a personal insight. This is all kind of happening in our field now, that they weren't supposed to share. You know, part of our Gemini Scorpio dance tonight is when to say, when to not say. You know, Eliphas Levy, great 19th century magician, said to know, to dare, to will, and to be silent sometimes, so you don't talk out the deep thing, you know, and you don't talk out the deep experience. Anyway, so everybody had a powerful personal insight that they weren't supposed to share. And then everybody had the shared vision of Persephone descending into the underworld, a maiden returning initiated queen. And the word queen is not royalty at first. It was an early word for a woman in her cultivated fullness. And we go, so that's all humming along right now as Ceres, Demeter, Trines, Uranus. So that went on, which is why the scholars, and there are scholars of the Eleusinian Mysteries at, you know, Boston University and Harvard, Richard Evans Schultes and these great people said, you know, guaranteed shared community vision, mushrooms. And when I was in Turkey with a great esteemed, you know, Paul Stamets and Andy Weil for the eclipse and everything, but we toured Cappadocia, where the wind has shaped the landscapes into a shape of mushrooms. And we went into these caves with a guide, early Christian retreat caves and shrine room and a saint. And Stamets pointed out to our guide, look around the saint's feet, those are psilocybe mushrooms. And the guide was like, oh, you're right. And I go, this could make being a Christian reclusive retreat like feasible for me, right? Just go into a cave with the mushrooms kind of thing. And everything wants to help us. It's why I do like referencing myself as, you know, entheo, anarcho, astro, animist. You know, we string these different chapters of our lives together in our own customized business card, you know, whatever. And then, you know, because they're all brewing. And I think I mentioned it last week, but have we noticed perhaps that all the different chapters of our lives are reporting in all the kind of when we did this or studied that, or that was an important time? I feel it very much. And, you know, a friend had invited me to go to the open house at his Aikido dojo. And I love the idea of Aikido. I love the idea of Aikido. I don't know if I want to be thrown around at this stage of the game, but who knows, you know, but I did go. And I remembered how I had a whole martial arts chapter of my life. And I go, I was very disciplined and very on time then. It's like, two drops of that. Yeah, every day, an hour and a half of Korean swordsmanship, right? And Shim Gum Do and some Aikido. And it's like, oh, I remember that. And I remember just even just walking on the mat. It's a dojo that people come from all over the world to go to. I mean, and it's like, I'm like, oh, but it's a half hour drive for me, right? Anyway, but it's like, it's very Japanese. And I did feel I'd been having challenging circumstances with feet and still working with neuropathy or things that are like, oh, am I dying? No. But walking on the mat was like walking at the beach. And it's like, oh, I feel great. And all of the terms, I loved them saying in the open house, you know, why do you this? You know, the witcher said, because you're protecting yourself and you're protecting your opponent. And I go, oh, I love that. And it's all spiral, no straight lines, right? It's all spiral. And part of their, to tease it into all of our, what it's like, don't block, what guide. Ooh. And I think this is so wonderfully important. It's all spirals and it's got humor to it. You know, and the parts that I remember, and I wonder if I will be disciplined enough to go back and learn how to fall and spiral and all, but I do love it so. And in the little bits that I had before, because I view it so important for all of us to be linguistic Aikido, to spiral out of polarity, because polarity feeds tyranny. Right. And it's a great challenge, you know, in a conversation or a dance. And so so it's like, don't block guide, you know, and it is very witty, right? Because it's these elegant moves, you know, it's somebody comes at you and you go, oh, you want to go that way? All right, you go that way. Right. And just with very little force, you can really pin somebody down, you know, in which you go, don't move, don't do that, you'll hurt yourself. And it's funny, right? Because it's true. It's this gentle, powerful, effective, smart thing. And it's very, the only creature I ever saw defeat Stella Coyote, the actual coyote I lived with for 19 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days, was a praying mantis. You know, because it was all praying mantis kung fu, right? The praying mantis was like, she couldn't get behind it. Coyotes come from behind and nip your Achilles tendon, you know, or they might bite it counting coup going, I could have severed your tendon, but I didn't, ha ha ha, coyote humor. So coyotes are very spirally. I mean, that's the thing, you know, and they don't respect weakness either. If you go, ooh, ooh, they're going, you're no good. Well, might as well, you know, get rid of you. But if you're like, oh, no. But the way the praying mantis defeated Stella Coyote, she really kept at it for like a half hour. And it really was spiraling. And it's also part of our balance, you know, which is, again, in balance, especially an antidote to the imprisoning of our senses in the modern world, which is the screens that we're on right now, which is whatever. And it's so essential to balance, to have peripheral vision. Most animals with the eyes on this, but we especially have to do that. But so Stella Coyote kept trying to get around the praying mantis, and it was, you know, fearsome little creature, but fearsome and elegant and dancing. And Stella Coyote, after like a half hour, she literally bowed. She bowed to the praying mantis and went off. And it's like, oh, that's great. Right. So the animal respect and all. So the immortality key, Brian Seymour. Yeah. All of this. Yeah. Linguistic Aikido, you know, metaphoric Aikido. It's in the fairy tales, shape shifting. Now you're a lion. Now you're a thing. Now you become this. What shall we become? Well, let me bring up briefly the chart of now for fun. Okay. Here we are over here. Alexis. Yes. Would you like to say a thing, Alexis? Can people unmute themselves if they want?
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Oh, good.
I am in graduate school for community development. And one of the things we study and read a lot about is how is community formed? And it's interesting because there are these different, or one of the theories is about connections. So I was thinking about concentric circles. So lines, spiral circles. Something I found to be very interesting is that, you know, often when we're wanting to create something or move something forward, we kind of get into our little social group, right? Our something we're aligned with, something we're working together to create, and we kind of stick in that group in order to move forward. And this, again, very tribal as well. But in fact, when you look at the research around both the readiness to receive change and the ability to change, the tighter our circles are to a certain extent, the less we actually have the ability to change and grow. And in communities that are able to change, not only do they have the strong inner structure and relationships within their inner circles, but one of the defining characteristics is that they actually have connections across. They're technically called weak connections, weak social connections. But it's like, I might be, you know, I go to the store every day and I see the butcher, and I've got this weak connection with the butcher, right? He might not be in my circle of people. I'm maybe I'm in the chamber, right? And that's like my circle of people. But knowing the butcher then helps me connect to a whole nother way of thinking, being, connecting. And that butcher then is also connected to a whole nother group of people. So it's actually in creating and fostering these ties across our social groups that change is more ready and we're more able to actually work together for change. I just love that. There's a theory put forth by this guy, Kenneth Wilkinson, and it's called the community field. That when you actually start creating these ties across the community, you're developing, he calls it a field, like it has its own aura. It has its own structure outside of the community itself. And that by influencing this larger field, you're also influencing, again, the ability to do things together. To the third component of community development in his eyes is action, being able to move from ideas and vision into action by creating the field. So just wanted to share that. And also someone shared a podcast with me, Ezra Klein. In November, he interviewed a rabbi, Rabbi Sharon Braun, and it's a lovely podcast. It's called Sermons We All Need to Hear Right Now. And in a certain sense, her conclusion is similar, and she looks at it within a tribal perspective, and she also brings compassion in around getting outside of your circle. But this idea of like what we need to do is make our circles larger, include other circles. And I highly, highly recommend it.
That's great. No, because we're here, you know, team, by whatever synchronous magic has convened us, you know, to be agents of the irresistible, all-inclusive, guiding, animating story. Here's what we can do, team. There we go. And again, like don't block guide. It's also like the dog whisperer, which is you don't tell a dog no. You go, hey, and then over here. Hey, over here, right? Hey, hey, no, oh, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. As so crucial. I like Bo on YouTube and an oldie but goodie when he was talking about community affinity groups, like what you were sort of mentioning again across borders, because we want to be able to dance with different everything in an Aikido spirit and an inclusive spirit. And Bo said, you know, we all need affinity groups, and it might be like 13 people. You don't even maybe need to know them really well, but it's like who brought what. And he said he's in the panhandle of Florida, and he goes, well, my affinity group is made up almost entirely of small C conservative Republicans and left-wing hippie anarchists, right? But we get stuff done. Right. And it's this conversation about community versus government, you know, and what are the functions? And he says, a pothole needs filling. And you could go, the government won't fill it. But with your affinity group of conservatives and hippie anarchists, you go, well, who knows how to do this? Let's just do this. Right. So it begins to distinguish between community mutual aid, right? And then we have the conversation about what is the government for, you know, and maybe unique collective experiments I would put before the team as a thing. But yeah, and then just to guide us into, you know, who are the cooperators standing by? Here's the sun, you know, this is the chart, here's me outside DC, this is the line of the horizon, this is east, this is west. But it's a live action chart. It's not going to move a lot, only the moon moves really quickly. The moon has changed degrees since we spoke. So the sun has just set, this is west, at zero Gemini, the beginning of the Gemini realm. It's we have Taurus back up, and now to diaspora, to communicate, to be shapeshifty, and it forms this communicative skill. And Gemini ruled by Mercury, but we throw rules out because everything can be liberating or imprisoning, including astrology. And really what it means for all of us is incarnational agent of Mercury, the messenger. And we go, where's Mercury? And we go, it's in Taurus. It's back here in the Taurus team. You know, where each of us to wonder, are we willing to be a communicative agent in a deep way on behalf of something we love in nature? And so excuse me. And then just to look at the pattern, the sun has a 150 degree angle to the moon in Scorpio. Again, ooh, differences make things happen. Gemini is kind of Jack who sells the cow for three magic beans kind of thing, you know, to Scorpios. So it's like, well, there's nothing more fun, and all of us get to have this, than to speak playfully and conversationally about deep, intense things. It's like, come on, we're going to talk about really difficult, intense things. It'll be fun. It'll be like the most fun, right? And then, so it's 150 degree angle to the moon, and the moon 150 degree angle down here to Neptune. It's called a yod, or a finger of destiny, meaning if we don't work it, it's like quirky. But if we work it, we got communicative skills about deep, deep things, you know, and then back here to Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination, Neptune at the very last degree of the zodiac. And I think Aaron shared with one of our team, and we'll put it in our Facebook, and we'll send it out to everybody who don't want to be on Facebook too, the Kogi prophecy, you know, and something I did for Ubiquity University, that was the Kogi prophecy, and then me talking about the year. It's pretty good. But the Kogis say their prophecy put out on the winter solstice is, just to refresh our memory, you humans, we are elder brother, you guys are really messing up and the earth is in terrible trouble. You have until the summer solstice of 2024, that's in about a minute, that's part of why we're gathering as occult allies, to plight your troth to Saturn, to make your pledge. Like, what are you willing to work with on behalf of nature for a sane and reverent community that includes all of the flora, fauna, fungi. You all, say the Kogi, have until the summer solstice of 2024 to make your pledge. And that will determine, say the Kogi, if more than one third of the earth is alive a year and a half later by the winter solstice of 2025. I'm like, sounds reasonable. Let me see. And so I look at the astrology, not that they were using that. We don't need any of these systems, but they all do agree. And I go, oh, well, how interesting. Here's Neptune at 29 degrees of Pisces, the last degree of the zodiac. And it's not going to go into Aries. It's stationing here through the summer solstice. And it says all the powerful images, all the dreams and vision that ever were or will be are here now. All of the forms that have ever encouraged humans to wise and conscious participation, all of our ancestors, all of David Graeber and Peter Lamborn Wilson and Stephen Buhner and Edward Albee and Bob Goffin and everybody, think of that. Anything that has ever brought forth the participatory best of humans is now available. So Neptune stations here. It'll be right at 29 Pisces, well through the summer solstice of 2024. Okay, so we plight our troth. We'll come back to Saturn in 2 seconds here. And then Neptune's going to retrograde, appear to move backwards, right? And then it comes back to 29 Pisces at the winter solstice of 2025. I'm like, well, okay, there's a powerful symmetry to this. And people are like, well, what's going to happen when Neptune enters Aries? I mean, it will dive into Aries just a smidge and then back up. It's like, it all depends on what we do now. And whether it's the Kogi prophecy or our own inner sense, it all depends on what we do now. And the sun does quintile. We love these different angles. I'm crazy about quintile, 72 degree angle. So the sun and Jupiter make a 72 degree angle to Saturn, which is irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love. So for each person who dedicates, you know, it's like then the fairy world says, well, then you may have irresistible eloquence on behalf of what you love. And, you know, there are images for each degree of the zodiac, Sabian symbols. The image for Saturn is kind of fun for us. It's finding fellow travelers on the path. Ah, all right. There we go. That'll do. Oh, wait. Eddie Nix would like to say something, please.
Oh, well, you're bringing up so many things. Peter Tompkins' book, The Secret Life of Nature, and your fairy talk. What an amazing book. And what we refuse to see, you know, getting caught in the straight line again. You were talking about the anarchists and the conservatives working together to fill the pothole. I think it's the perfect sort of Sabian symbol for something going on now, because if we're obsessed with this idea of politics being a linear thing with those people over on that side and we're over here, I always see it as a circle. And the anarchists, yes, are right next to the libertarians. And it just takes a meal to kind of break down those couple of sticky points to go, yeah, we really do believe the same thing. We really do honor the same things. And, you know, we may use different words. The Kogi you brought up, I was so blessed to be able to be down in Colombia with Jerome and the gang. And one of the things that struck me about their culture, which is just so amazing, is that they have this idea of pagamentos, these offerings, these thank yous that they would give to everything, everywhere they were. They couldn't walk by a tree without putting something in that tree and saying a prayer to that tree and thanking that tree. And you think, how often do we do this? You know, I walked through the woods today looking for mushrooms and I was thinking about mushrooms. I wasn't thanking the trees, but I should have been thanking the trees. A lot of what you said resonated with me, especially with the timing of what you're saying. Like, we seem to be at a place where this summer we're going to have to make some choices, and the shit that's coming at us is so fucking heavy that maybe the only tactic that we have is to use that jujitsu, that wu wei, and take that energy. And instead of standing there with a sign in your encampment and saying, come and arrest me, to move, to be like water, as the yellow vests in Hong Kong taught us. You know, here's the new resistance. You're not standing in a line. You're moving. You're like water. Let them come, you know, take it with you and do that dance together. And then when we come out of that dance, maybe we will see things a little more in the same way.
Sean, yeah.
Yes. Oh, so much. And that gives me, there's even more that I want to riff with there, because, you know, thinking about that sense of offering and that sense of thanks. And one of the things that Stephen really emphasized, and people would think it was cool and think it was a little saying and think it was a parlor trick, but it was really the heart of everything that he did, which was bring your awareness to feeling your beating heart. And actually feeling that heartbeat, not to the thought that your heart is beating, and then thanking your heart, and then going back to your heartbeat and learning to stay with that. And then once you're able to do that, then doing the same thing with a tree, and then doing the same thing with a person, and doing the same thing with everything. And so that awareness and that deep gratitude, and I'm also, as you're talking about that, witnessing that among the Kogi, I'm taken back to the Quechua and Aymara people in Bolivia, and about how when coca is being chewed in every moment of the day, it's being done in a precise, ritual, thankful way. And you're putting together the four leaves that you wrap around the lime, and the four leaves are representing the four directions. And you offer a pinch of the coca to Pachamama before you take the pinch of the coca yourself. And then when you're done with it, you either bury it within the earth for Pachamama or burn it for her. And you're doing this ritual 20, 30, 40 times a day, because you need to be chewing coca all the time to be at those altitudes, and just the way that reorients everything. And then the final place that kind of brings me to is this question of, like, I'm hearing this prophecy about whether a third of the people on Earth will be alive next year or not. And I realize there's actually an interesting trickster bargaining game we can play with that, in terms of what exactly are the terms of this gamble? And if we say, okay, how do we define who is alive? And I think about, you know, this particular place I'm in, praying to be fully incarnated before I die. Would I be counted among the living before that's accomplished? And so if we go to saying, okay, maybe only a third of the earth will be alive next year, maybe more than a third, or maybe only a third of the people on earth will be alive next year, maybe more than a third will be alive next year. If we change that definition from alive to meaning fully incarnated, fully realized, fully present, rather than not dead, then that becomes a much more promising gamble to take part in, and something much more worthy of our joyfully, very fearfully deciding, okay, how do we want to be behaving on the summer solstice when this pattern is set?
That's great. Right. And when I went to the Aikido open house and thought, you know, it's like a remember, and embodied or not, it's like, is this where I just let it all slide? And it's like, no. And I did say, you know, any questions? And I go, I have grown lazy and stiff. I have grown lazy and stiff, and I would like to come back, you know, but I, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, come. But it's true. It's like, right, we have these decisions, and it's like, no, you know, it's like, let it all go with the earth or our body, like, oh, what the hell, you know? You know, and we can all be befoibled. I certainly, you know, we're all befoibled. But yes, so much in what everyone is contributing and what you say, and talking across borders, which I think is, right, Yeah, and what we pledge to. So something I keep in my pocket too was when I was part of this thing called the Committee for the Republic, and it was left wing, right wing, conservative, Republican jurists, you know, lawyers for people in Guantanamo. I mean, it was a pretty diverse, you know, James Bamford, important, you know, secret intelligence guy. I mean, it was pretty diverse. I was kind of the pagan trickster. But at one point, John Henry gathering said, "That's the most conservative person in the room. Go talk to that guy." And I was like, "Alrighty, we like crossing borders. We like taking our practicing our skills, right? Of not." And so this man said, "Oh, okay, hi. What do you know about Edmund Burke?" And I go, "Ooh, not very much." And he said, "Well, this conversation about big government, small government is irrelevant. Edmund Burke said, a conservative thinker, you know, said the more we cultivate inner authority and inner citizenship skills, the fewer outer rules and laws we need." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, yeah. This is astrology. This is Saturn. This is Taoism. This is metaphysics 101. And the conservative guy said, "Taoism, I love Taoism. And I don't have any conservative friends to speak it with." And it's like, and then we became just really great buddies. And I go, this is a great cross-purpose conversation. This is a Saturn conversation, sun to Saturn. The more we cultivate good citizenship, you know, mutual aid, kindness, the fewer outer rules we need, except for corporations who can't be trusted. They need rules and regulations, which is why in the missive, right, I also included Jasmine Crockett, wonderful, wonderful Black congresswoman, I think from Tennessee, help me. But she's so spicy and great. She's the one who called Marjorie Taylor Greene a bleach blonde, bad built butch. Anyway, whatever the thing was. But it's her little snippet. It's in the missive we sent out today. Just delineating Project 25. You know, it's like, we got to know what this thing is, you know, that's coming down the line, so that we can be informed in our Aikido nuance complexity of what's at stake, going, And it's also a skill, an Aikido conversational skill across borders that a wonderful ally who's now dead, I know so many great dead people, God, I hope they all meet, taught me. She said, "Nobody ever minds being asked, 'Did you know?' unless we ask it in a snooty term. 'Did you know about this?' 'Oh no, I didn't.'" Right. So that's a spiraling thing. Did you know, you know, the Kuwaitis were Flint drilling oil into Iraq? You know, what? No, I didn't. You know. So did you know is a great practice. And so Gemini reminds us, like, the more we know, the more deeply we can dance with everyone and everything. Did you know about this? No, I didn't. Because then, you know, then we're, you know, and I do. I cross borders. You know, I went to CPAC, right? Well, with the conservative guy who became a great buddy, and we go to CPAC, and he's like, "These guys are bleeping nuts," right? You know, and I'm a deep conservative, but these guys are really nuts. Although he was given some Ronald Reagan award at the time, but he's like, "Oh, never mind these people. Let's just, you and I, Caroline, go talk." Anyway, it just was very charming. So you never know. You never know. It's like the fabulous movie, The Lives of Others, which is about the Stasi. It's about how the sociopathic heart can bloom again. Not everybody, but you never know. And so, you know, and it's also part of our practice to speak to the part of somebody we want to invite to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves, which is why in the Aikido, we want to diagnose, which is towards healing, but judging is prison, right? So that's just something we put on the line. There's a million things, but anyway, but for us right now, you know, to now, tonight, this week, for fun, to wonder what is one's primary dedication. Or it's Gemini. or two or three, right? What are our two or three dedications, you know, just to wonder? And then the metaphors. I was talking to my brother, and his girlfriend had moved to Mexico, and they said, well, when we left Eugene, Oregon, we left everything. My brother said, I have no books. And I go, which is amazing, because he's a bibliophile. I have no books. I have no whatever. I have no anything, you know, and we have no support systems. We have no whatever. But they do. They have this little inexpensive life in Mexico, renting a room with, and there's a fantastic pool. And I said, well, everything that we've ever done, let's think of it as a little, like a tardigrade. It's dehydrated, but you put it in water and it comes right back to life, right? So I said, well, all the things that you left, that's good, but the things that you left that you miss, just think of them in the pool as reshaping themselves and rehydrating and coming back to life. And they're like, oh, that sounds fun. And then just for all of us to Neptune, like anything that's, you know, just add water, add water, like the space monkeys, add water and see it kind of come back to life. So everything can be liberating or imprisoning. And just for the whimsy of it, you know, have this very witty, short fashion video. and people have very different, it's very short, it's very wonderful responses to it. But it reminds me of John Berger, wonderful, wonderful, smart, smart Marxist art critic, in Ways of Seeing, saying, you know, before industrialism, we had naked people in paintings cavorting. And he said, once we have industrialism, we have the nude in art. And it's almost always the woman looking directly out of the painting, watching the viewer watch her. And he says, basically, this is a sneaky part of the reality police, that whatever, for maybe for everybody now, but for women, that whatever they're doing, they're watching themselves do it. Watching themselves weeping at their father's funeral, watching themselves make love, watching themselves, whatever. And so he said, you know, part for all of us, and this is part of the rewilding, right, is to become naked, not good. So here is this very witty, short video, which we can interpret in many ways, but one of them is that. So here's our short video. Yes. Anyway, I find that so wonderful on so many levels. One is we could take it as a John Berger thing, going, you know, to be voguing through the world and missing things, but it's very witty, right? It's a short, very liberating thing. It's like the earliest, most liberating films, like Man with a Movie Camera by Jigo Vertov, made in 1913 or whatever. It was the movie camera going through Russia, and it was so seductive, but then it would pull back and you'd see, and it would be filming the movie camera filming it. So it was like immersed in the illusion and then giving you the keys to not be, you know, whatever. And I find that video very charming. Somebody watched it and said, oh, well, doing ordinary things is sexy. And it's like, you could get that out of it too, you know. I find it very liberating, because it's like, oh, you know. Anyway, so anybody else's response? Did you want to say something about the video, Eddie, or
no? It just brought up Teresa just made the best loaf of pumpernickel Russian bread, which, you know, I mean, bread is, you know, they say bread is life. But, you know, when you see someone who keeps their starter and works different grains into their breads and you get to eat that stuff, it fulfills a big part of the, you know, the fuel situation, I think, with humans. It also brings up Bucky Fuller and his beautiful wisdom of, hey, we already have everything we need. You know, we have more than we could possibly use. We just have to figure out how to do it right. And I think if we keep that in our perspective in this, you know, culture of want and scarcity, and really flip that switch into the culture of abundance and start looking at these people around us and the things around us as allies. And maybe it's about time to really take this trickster thing seriously. You know, start finding these great tricksters that have pulled off these actions that are not, you know, the mainstream action. They're like the yes men. They're like, you know, John Trudell and AIM taking over Alcatraz Island, or the beautiful beginnings of Occupy Wall Street. You know, it's things we haven't thought about yet that are right in front of us, ready to manifest themselves. And, you know, when Tron was talking about the psychedelic experience, of course, keeping in mind this idea of frequency, it's all about frequency. You know, we don't need all these material things like fossil fuels and solar panels. We have to adjust our frequency, and we have to work with the frequencies. Remember that the void is not the void. The ether is there, right? It's there. We can work with it. The psychedelic experience isn't something that comes into us. We're just tuning in. It's always there. We might not want to, you know, tune into the psychedelic hallucination aspect of it, but the bliss, the understanding, the humanity and the sympathy and the compassion, that's always there. So that's what I was hearing while you were giving your beautiful chart update and Neptune.
And Neptune. No, that's super great. Yeah, that's super great. And then I'll toss to you in 2 seconds, Sean, but just humming with what you said. You know, so as each one of us wonders and really even writes down, you know, primary dedication, the inward dedication, and even the question about our inward dedication strengthens our outward signal. So we are in this enhanced field of synchronicity, of call and response, which is always there, but some things are always true and times when they're truer, right? So by inward focus, we are more available to be danced into place with the larger community that we're all a part of. So I just wanted to say that's part of our encouraged. So being an anarcho Saturn person, I really don't like telling people to do anything, but only if you want your life to work, you know, I'm encouraging, you know, the introspection and the writing down, because the inner work makes us better citizens and more likely to be danced into place with those with whom we have work to do. But what did you want to say, Sean? Yeah.
Yeah, three quick things. One is, building on what Eddie was just saying, our own neurotransmitters are potent psychoactive compounds, and they are just as subject to Timothy Leary's three sets of conditions of set, setting, and dosage as anything we take in externally is. And so by recalibrating our mindset, which is so deeply connected with that frequency question, and shifting what we can shift in our setting, or at least how we define our setting, then we can shift what our transmitters will do. The second thing that comes to mind is circling back to Peter Lamborn Wilson. And I think that one of his most important contributions was writing as Hakim Bey, talking about the temporary autonomous zone. And that was such a huge transformational concept for me, because it was, we don't have to wait until the state and the corporations are completely eliminated. We can create these temporary spaces in every moment that's available to us, in which the autonomous already exists. And lastly, and I don't know entirely how this is related, but a figure who I had never investigated before has been coming up again for me the past few days, and that is Vajrayogini, who is one of the Tibetan Dakinis, and she is the wielder of the feminine knife of liberation. And that knife is not a weapon, it's a tool for cutting away the restraints.
That's great. And then okay, we're beginning to, oh no, don't hit the leave meeting thing, Caroline. No, there we go, wait a minute. No, don't do that. Okay, let's get to okay, let me just come back to the chart briefly. A nice segue. We love segues. To what you were saying is another quintile, irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love and the capacity to open portals between worlds, right? Invited on in, and then just to kind of animate what I sent forth in the missive, but we have a waxing full moon this week, and it's the Gemini Sagittarius, everything's talking, everything's telling us its story all the time, moon. And if we just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we'd be back in the dance. And I love this, again, I carry this in my pocket, this moment in Dion Fortune's great book, Moon Magic, where the priestess, Morgan Le Fay Morgan, and she set up her workspace, her temple, and she set up her altar, and she's put a vase of flowers, humble vase of flowers, dedicated to serve as an invitation for Isis, the goddess of nature, to come back into the world. And she steps outside, and she's like, oh, and this is not going well with her lover, and this isn't going well, and this is terrible, and just all these things, just about it. And she steps back inside, and she sees the full moon shine through the window, in the humble vase of flowers that she dedicated there. And she feels this incredible downrush of energy, like, boom. She goes, it didn't matter what I was worried about, this or that, or this small thing or that, or minor issues or personality squabbles. The humble vase of flowers dedicated as an invitation had clearly been accepted. And in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts, right? It's a wonderful British occult phrase, to be back on one's contacts, right? Where it's just like, it's happening. Like, well, we have those, right? There's the moon. I bet it's at 21 Libra. What is? Back on together. The call and response, you know, what we hope is true. So I wanted to just play with that, a skosh. And then there's so much that we're stirring up here. The spiraling, just the segue from what you were saying is Mars, woofy, right next to what's called the north node of the moon, whose image, the assignment for all of us, is a person weaving a magical basket out of serpents. That's very wrathful Dakinis, right? And it's like, no, this isn't meant to be completely safe, right? But dangerous in a good way, you know? And so what would that mean for each one of us to be weaving a magical basket out of serpents, out of living things to be respected that are like, ooh, spicy, interweaving, conflicting desires. And it is right next to Mars, whose image is nature spirits reveling in the light of the sunset. And we go, right. And Mars has a quintile to Pluto. Right. So this is a part of us, an adventurous, woofy part, dancing at sunset. And as you said, like the Koji and, well, I mean, the dogs and I, when we all remember, we do go through the woods going, thank you, trees, thank you very much, thank you. And that's the primary Jupiter blessing, you know, make a well for you and for you and make a well for you of engaging in reciprocal blessing with even humans, right? Make a well for you. And so Mars quintile Pluto says we know how to dance with the excuse me with intensity. We know this, and the north and south nodes of the moon, where the moon crosses the sun's path, are always opposite. And the south node is what we already know how to do, and it's what you know. You were saying, Eddie, and you, Sean, and everybody here in their heart. We already know we have the Libra intimacy skills of respectful relating. We know our ancestors and all the people we've invited in, right? In our mythic DNA, we know how to do this. And then the Aries dynamic says, well, we have a magical basket out of serpents, you know, out of these, you know, bring old things alive, manners in a fresh new way. And the Mars quintile Pluto reminds us again, like, when did humans make the underworld a bad place? It's like, oh, once there's a priesthood, right? Before that, the underworld was a serious place. You know, our prefix dis, D-Y-S, D-I-S means underworld. So any dis-ease takes us to the underworld where our souls can speak more deeply to us. I mean, to be an effective citizen, you got to spend some time in the underworld speaking to your soul, sometimes through adversity, you know, in order to be a participant. It's why Aquarius is Saturn and Uranus, you know, deep, powerful dedication and the capacity for solitude in order to be trickster participant with others. And we go, well, that's great. Anyway, so Mars does quintile Pluto. And so it says, you know, the underworld spa special, right, is really, you know, available. I mean, often available, right? But it's like just to scrub off the old parts of ourselves that we don't need anymore. And we don't even need to know. We just go, if there's anything, you know, in our psyche that is an impediment to us being danced into place and being kind, as well as reverent and ingenious and spicy. I mean, we add spicy too. You know, like Granny Weatherwax says, we're witches, we don't do nice, because the word nice comes from nescient, which means ignorant. So we're not nice, but we do want to be kind, right? And so that's it. And it's a great week to Kahoot, because it says, you know, to delineate, you know, the person that embodied, the person we want to be. And just that idea that we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. So in a deep place, it's like, well, these are the qualities. This is the quality of animals and plants, you know, I want to be. Hold me to this, oh, spirit of wolf that animates the universe. So that's fun. So, yeah. And then I did host James Fadiman on radio on Thursday. Wonderful, wonderful. In his, you know, mid to late 80s, very great. You know, LSD, microdosing, whatever. Very kind person. Very kind and playful person. It's like, oh, that works. Because a lot of times, you know, I don't know, I'm teetering on the edge of grumpiness. But, you know, that with the entheogens as a business, it's like, but those people aren't that kind. I'm not sure if they're, anyway, we compost that. We wish them well. I mean, Jupiter and Uranus says, you know, for all of us to aspire to run on the fuel of a reciprocal liberating blessing. That's a good aspiration. That's a good aspiration. So there we have it for now, team. Anybody want to say anything before we deconvene? Oh, Theo says, check out the International Peace Coalition meeting on Zoom Fridays, 11 to 1. We will send the chat to everybody. That's great. Peter Lamborn Wilson, yes, I want to dive in and know more and more and more and more. That's super great. And if you're ever in Viroqua, Wisconsin, or people go to Viroqua just to go to Eddie's bookstore. I mean, it is, and I have a video of it, just a little bit, you know, on the ground floor, but you did take me up to the third floor, and it's like an oldie timey, like noir elevator. That was so really great. So it is a fabulous Mecca. That's great. Right. The Queen of Swords, Anne says, the Queen of Swords in the Smith-Waite deck holds the sword upright with which she has just cut her bonds. Well, the Statue of Freedom on top of the Capitol in D.C. and in Georgia, sword not harming, discernment and cutting away in that way. That's right. Eric Newman says, appreciate joining and listening tonight. Wonderful conversation, sharing of relevant thoughts, loving you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you as well. So we have a wonderful outro song. Feel free to dance to it. And if self-conscious, you can turn off the video and smoke up or whatever you want to do. And yes, Jasmine Crockett, right? A Democrat from Texas. Yes, I love her. I love her. And I will. Jasmine Crockett from Texas. Jasmine Crockett. Yeah, wonderful person. So there we go. Anybody want to know? That's good. I think we're good. So here we have this very fun song, and it's in keeping. It's Daka Braka. Some of you might have heard it before. It's a great video, but it's in keeping of like from the forest into the world and back into the forest. It's the to and fro. So here we go, team. Daka Braka and Visma. There we go.